Got a little bone to pick with the programming department. Would it kill you every once in a while to play a little fog hat?
Slow ride.
Just turned into a little game of name that artist for me, didn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if you'll get this.
I've never heard this before.
It's very random, Dory.
Let me hear the voice again. Is it somebody I've heard of?
No, I don't believe so. I have never heard of this person. It was a random Google.
That's what you're doing now?
Well, I'll tell you.
Random Googles?
If we can just pull back the curtain a little bit, Dory, what did you ask me just a few minutes ago off the air?
This is, and I don't want to brag, but I think that, you know, to a certain extent, I'm the manager of this show, the coach of this show, and I've learned that you can get the most out of people by being super supportive of them, and not try to, you know, call out mistakes publicly or to their face or anything. But I just had a feeling. Is that all we got of that?
Oh, no.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, it's still going.
So I just had a feeling that you had completely forgotten about this being Friday and the fog hat thing and all of that. I don't know why I had that feeling, because you're usually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But I just said, hey, Sean, have you picked out a really good song for us coming out of the news?
Yep. And I said, I sure do, Dory. And then you said to me, well, now, did you remember? No, I didn't, Dory. And
right.
You've only done this like maybe two times, maybe three times, where you've sort of subtly, you know, pushed me in that direction. And every time, yeah, I'm amazed, because it's like kismet or something here.
It's almost an ESP thing where I, for whatever reason, I just know you have forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was my way of just gently reminding you. And you didn't have to tell me that you had forgotten.
No.
You could have just said, oh, yeah, I got a great one for you. But I just felt really good about that. I felt proud of how I handled that moment.
Yeah, and I feel proud, too, because I didn't lie to you, Dory. I just told you the truth.
Yeah, I love that.
That's what good relationships and good radio is about.
Is this by any chance Fu Manchu?
You're absolutely wrong. No, this is a woman or a band named Claudia Hoser or Hoiser. That's all I know.
I hope it's Hoiser.
Yeah, not Hoser.
Hoser.
Yeah. Well, actually, there is a band called Hoser.
That's true.
Yeah.
They had that hit song a few years ago.
Take Me to Church.
Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, that one.
Premiere video. We hope you liked it.
I did like it.
Like I said, throw your name in the comment section where you're listening.
Okay, thanks, Claudia. She's very pretty.
Is she?
Yes.
I don't see external beauty. I only see the beauty within, and that's why you are my Brad Pitt, Sean.
Oh, that is so nice.
I know. See, that's the kind of coach I am. Yeah, that's how you win a state championship, right there. You just get people so they want to run through a wall for you by just being supportive and unconditional. That's what's happening there. Okay. Should I get to the big lead here?
I would say yes.
That was so much fun, and now I'm going to get all angry again. Okay, hold on. Let me flip a switch here. All right, let's get right to the big lead.
The big lead, Bizarro World.
I mean this in all seriousness. If the two things that happened this week with the Seattle City Council come to fruition, we will look back on the week of July 6th through 10, 2020, as the most disastrous, catastrophic week in Seattle history. On Monday, Seattle City Council voted to impose the largest business tax in the history of our city. The head tax about 3 years ago that everybody recognized would be a job killer. That was for about $50 million a year, and it was a roaring good economy. Now, these brainiacs on the Seattle City Council, they want to raise taxes on businesses $200 million a year in a disastrous economy. When many businesses don't even know if they can survive, when companies like Nordstrom are closing stores and laying off employees, a company that would be deeply affected by this tax, when Amazon has shown that it is not going to tolerate a city where the leaders despise the company, when Sawant says Bezos is the enemy, this is going to be disastrous for the city of Seattle. Now, it could be wondrous for the rest of the region, for Bellevue, Issaquah, Redmond, Everett, Tacoma, because if the businesses already have an employee base here, they don't want to go to Austin, Texas, they would just move out of Seattle. And they will, because businesses want to minimize their expenses. And taxation like this is an outrageous expense, especially given the fact that nobody has asked the question, how's the money going to be spent? The city council says, well, we're going to use it to deal with homelessness. We're already spending more money per capita on homelessness than any city in the country. There is, and homelessness has gotten even more disastrous with these people in charge. There's no correlation between spending and solving homelessness, or else we wouldn't have such a problem in Seattle. It's not about solving homelessness. It's about creating a permanency of government. They will create a bunch of six-figure jobs for their cronies. The only reason Seattle has any budget crisis is because they have been spending like drunken monsters. I don't say drunken sailors anymore because I really respect sailors. And I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to make that comparison anymore. But they've been like drunken monsters in their spending. The accused child rapist, former mayor, added 1,600 jobs at six figures total cost each when you factor in all the benefits. Those jobs could be eliminated. Almost all of them could be. But they don't ever cut government. So they just want to grow government. So economically, disastrous week because this business tax, and I'll give credit, the Seattle Times, even today, their economist or economics columnist, I don't know if he's a trained economist, John Talton, but he wrote a story today about how absolutely disastrous this will be because business will leave Seattle when you have the biggest business tax, the biggest head tax in the country. Businesses are not going to come to Seattle. And when you have an economy, here's the headline of John Talton's column. Seattle's new tax pushes us to a tipping point. In his lead graph, Seattle's facing more economic uncertainty than the 1970s, a world where a pandemic and nationalism are combining to threaten a repeat of the Great Depression. Our unemployment rate here is 14%. And what the city council wants to do is tax good-paying jobs when almost every other city in the country would fight and give tax breaks to attract six-figure earners to their city. Seattle wants to get rid of them because it's a Marxist platform coming to fruition. So that's disaster number one. But even worse, city council yesterday voting 7-2 to cut police funding by 50%. That is a veto-proof majority of the council. Mayor Jenny Durkan knows that will be a disaster. And yet she can't veto it because they got more than six votes on the city council. They call it Decriminalize Seattle, the movement that pushed for this. And community activist, self-declared, Nikita Oliver, she's with a group called Creative Justice that doesn't want criminals to ever go to jail. And she talked about what they want to see funded instead of the police.
Ensure that young people and our families have access to the sorts of resources, housing, economic and employment opportunity, health care, education, which actually prevent young people and their families from ever entering the school to prison pipeline.
How do we not fund that? What do you mean we have to fund those things? We spend billions on those things. And again, if the city's such a disaster, it's been under Democrat control, one-party control, for my entire lifetime. Why isn't it better by now with the hundreds of billions over my lifetime that's been spent? All that's happened is that it's gotten dramatically worse, worst property crime in the country, worst heroin problem in the nation. Homelessness, one of the worst homelessness cities in the country. You have created all of this. You, your party, your people have created all of this. The Democrats, the socialists, now the Marxists that are in control. Teresa Mosqueda on the city council says they want to completely dismantle everything.
When millions of people took to the street to protest excessive use of force and police violence, they were met with excessive use of force and police violence. But it's not just about a few bad actors. It is the institution of policing itself that must be dismantled.
Okay, policing must be dismantled. In other words, a 50% cut is just the beginning. And so what does all this mean? It means that if, you know, some meth head tries to throw a woman off an overpass over I-5 in downtown Seattle, as happened several months ago, we better hope that there are some good Samaritans walking by, because we're not going to have any police to handle situations like that. And if there's not a good Samaritan, well, then we're going to lose a couple people being flipped over overpasses. Car break-ins, already the worst property crime in the United States. Home invasions, car break-ins, watch those numbers skyrocket. And when you combine that with the Monday taxation vote that absolutely will drive jobs and businesses out of the city, I mean, there is no question about that. The Seattle Times recognizes that. Everybody who knows anything about economics recognizes that. So when all of those good-paying jobs leave, then, oh, they're just a bunch of six-figure people. We don't need them. How do you think the coffee shops downtown, the baristas, how do you think they make their living? It's from that vibrant business community. Tom Douglas announced this week he's closing two downtown restaurants because he doesn't see it coming back. We already have business. I mean, there's a paradigm shift in business. More and more companies have realized that they can have a lot of employees working from home. All that pricey, you know, $2 million downtown condo high-rises that have been built, people aren't going to need to live downtown anymore. They're not going to want to. They're not going to want to buy any of those or rent any of those apartments that have gone up. The suburbs are going to benefit. The rural areas. And as I said, you know, look to Tacoma and Everett. There'll be a boom time there, especially if they keep their cops and they can control crime on the streets, because Seattle is going to see a meltdown. But some of the council members are just too ignorant to realize what they are a part of. As I've said, you know, these council members, they were trained at places like Cal Berkeley and Evergreen State College, radicalized universities that have long dreamed to have a civic petri dish for Marxism. And then you have people like Shama Sawant and Tammy Morales, who make no bones. Morales hasn't, you know, called herself a Marxist. Sawant's part of Socialist Alternative. They are Marxist, so she doesn't make any bones about that. But they want to destroy everything. Some of the council members have been radicalized from college. I got a text message from somebody, and I'm not going to name. It's a council member I talked about earlier. He's a public official. Andrew Lewis. And he said I was friends with him when he was a kid growing up in Seattle. He was a really cool kid and told me some of the stuff he liked to collect. And he said, I don't know what's happened to him. But, you know, he went to Cal Berkeley. And, you know, that's the hotbed of radical leftism. And so we're going to see jobs disappear, not just the evil big businesses, but all of the downstream businesses, all of the coffee shops, the little restaurants, cafes. They're all going bye-bye. And what's going to take over, because cities like nature abhor a vacuum, and it's going to be filled with, Dan Satterberg has legalized all drugs, heroin, meth, in personal possession amounts. We'll see the streets continue to fill with homeless heroin addicts. We'll see crime, because the heroin addicts still have to buy their drugs from the gangs. We have two murders in CHOP that are still unsolved. Those murderers are running free. That's the vision. That's the vision. Crime's going to explode. No cops to police it. Murderers walking free. I'm not making this up. This is the most disastrous week in Seattle history. It'll do more to destroy business, and it will do more to destroy public safety. Carmen Best, Seattle Police Chief, responded to the effort to cut cops by 50%.
I respect Councilmember Mosqueda. I think that she is very passionate about what she's doing, but she also needs to think about, you know, the fact that public safety and the budget are intertwined, and that we need to make sure that we're doing what's in the best interest of everybody. If anybody recognizes issues of systemic racism and institutional racism, it's me.
And she told Channel 7, Cairo7.com, that they don't even have a plan for all the money they're going to cut from the police budget.
I'm hoping that the city council will rethink the plan to do that without having a plan for how we're going to re-envision policing and how it will work.
And she started by saying that she respects Teresa Mosqueda. I do not, because I know how this is going to end. And I'll put my record of predictions over the years. I'll put it up against anybody's. If these two things go forward, it will be, mark my words, July 6th through 10, 2020, will be remembered as the most disastrous week in Seattle history. But again, a lot of you are listening in Everett and Tacoma and Snohomish and Bellevue and Redmond, Issaquah, Bremerton. It's going to be great for surrounding areas. As long as the crime stays contained in Seattle, as long as the devastation stays contained, if the businesses stay in the region, it will be in a net, no gain, no loss for the region. Seattle will become dystopian nightmare, and the rest of the region will benefit. So everybody else, rejoice. But the city of Seattle is in the process of destroying itself. And that is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Okay, the other thing that we are seeing loud and clear. Hey, you can't see things loud and clear. The other thing that we are seeing bright and vivid is how you live your life, how you think will determine if you go to prison or not. Not the crime you commit, but the way you think. if you are not far to the left, you could go to the prison for the exact same crime that someone on the left does commit. Details coming up. How cheery is that? As the Dori Monson Show rolls on. Sean?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I see what the problem here is. Mm-hmm.
So this is what my positive approach to coaching gets me?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because the song that...
Maybe I'd be more of a Bobby Knight. Maybe I gotta be a screamer and throw chairs and try to intimidate people.
No, because then I would just try to sort of sabotage the show.
I try to be more of a Pete Carroll. Just, you know, build up people, lift them up, make them...
Well, the
didn't
song...
Didn't I say this right as we went into the break?
You did, yeah. And then it swiftly left my head because I was on a mission to go use the family bathroom for bathroom purposes.
But, see, this is why I had that feeling a half hour ago that you were going to forget the fog hat thing. I just have the sense that something's a little off.
Yeah. And I do have a lot on my mind today, so that could be it.
Okay, well, I wish I had time to hear about that.
Yeah, I bet you do, Dory.
I really do. Wait, this isn't even... Didn't I even ask for the...
Yeah, yeah.
One with Cascade?
Yeah, you did. You did. But in a pinch, I just came up with the instrumental. And it's funny because the song is called I Remember, but I just didn't today.
You can't even give me the version I requested?
Oh, I can. Yeah, sure.
Nicole?
Yeah? What can I do for you, Dory?
I don't know. I need help.
Dory's being a whiny.
You know what? We're in the final stretch of the
week. Being a whiny?
Just
roll trying
with
to
it.
Maximize the show. No. What should I do? How should I handle this? Don't drown me out.
I'm not.
Mister.
I'm not.
I heard you start to. It was like I was doing an Oscars speech that went too long.
He just wanted to give you some volume so that you could dance.
I'm not dancing. I can't dance. I'm chair locked because of my microphone position in my home studio. But you're the second in charge, Nicole. I might have to delegate this to you because my positive approach of a half hour ago, it just didn't work.
Well, I think you jinxed him. He was doing well on his own.
I was. I mean, granted, a half an hour ago, it did work, but it didn't work. It didn't work 10 minutes ago.
Oh, for the love. Okay. Hey, bring this up. I want to hear a little bit of this. I'm dancing in my chair, at least. Okay, I feel better now. Crying out loud. Okay, lots of other stuff going on in the news. We talked yesterday about how ridiculous it was that Bill de Blasio, the absolute failure of a mayor in NYC, he was out with Al Sharpton. They were painting in huge block letters on the street, Black Lives Matter, in front of Trump Tower. And to see him out there painting the street when last week violent crime and shootings in New York City were up 308% versus a year ago. Murders are skyrocketing in New York. And of all the shooting victims in the month of June, 97% were people of color. So while literally his citizens are dying on the streets of his city, Bill de Blasio's out with a paintbrush. But this is a trend nationwide. We have Black Lives Matter painted in the street in Seattle and in cities all across the country. Well, last week, the folks at Judicial Watch, a story that was broken on our show because we had a great tip from Jazz Shaw. But at Judicial Watch, they applied for a permit in Washington, D.C., because the mayor of D.C. had painted Black Lives Matter in the street there. And my beef is not with the words Black Lives Matter. But shouldn't everybody be able to paint the street? And all of these were done without permits. It was just people who wanted to paint the street. And so the people at Judicial Watch, they wanted to paint. I don't remember what their slogan was, but it was something about equal justice under the law for all, something like that. And they are being denied. So what does that tell us when only if you think the way government is now mandating thought to be, you can go and paint the streets any message you want? But if you dare to be a bit of a rebel, go Juanita. Now, if you dare to be a bit of a rebel or an iconoclast, if you don't engage in groupthink, but you're equally passionate about your message, you can't paint it in the street. Because government is now dictating what thought is allowable. Because messages are thoughts, and they're saying, this thought's allowable, your thought is not. There was a couple, there was a city in California where they had painted Black Lives Matter. And a couple there said, well, and you know, I've told you my disagreements with the organization. I've said a million times, yes, all black lives matter. Every black life matters, of course. The organization has Marxist roots. They are against paternalism. They're against the Western family structure. Those are things that I believe in deeply. And so I disagree with the organization. I support the individuality of message that every single black life matters. But I don't have to agree with the ideology of the organization behind it. And there are other people who have problems with the organization. So a couple in California, David Nelson and his wife, they went out with black paint and they started painting over the Black Lives Matter in the streets. Him and his wife, Nicole.
She said, I'm going to go down there and paint over it. And I said, nah. She goes, yes, I am. Well, she has her mind made up. That's what she's going to do, what she's going to do. So we went down there, and I went down there just to have her back. And then somebody got in my face and just kind of set me off. And I want to be clear that I wish I would have handled it more diplomatically. But I was angry. And we're sick of this. We're sick of the narrative.
I just don't want them to defund our police. Luckily, we have them. Thank God we have them in these last couple days.
So that was this couple's rationale, that one of the missions of that organization is defunding the police. And here in Seattle, they voted to cut police funding yesterday by 50%, as I talked about. And so some people, if their thinking is approved by government, can paint a message, but other people, if their thinking is rejected by government, they can't go and paint over it. When government starts telling you what you can think, and this guy, he might lose his job now because he and his wife did.
Yes, I'm actually on a leave type of thing right now to wait and see what happens.
He told Tucker Carlson about this. I'll give you one other ridiculous example. Up in Vancouver, B.C., like we have on Capitol Hill, some of the rainbow crosswalks. In Vancouver, B.C., they have a rainbow crosswalk. And a few days ago, a Mustang peeled out on the rainbow crosswalk and left tire skid marks on it. Like you see on every single road everywhere. But because this car did it on the rainbow crosswalk, they're looking for the driver of that Mustang to charge with a hate crime. Now, nobody knows if he does it at every intersection when he can, but But they've released video from some building nearby of the car peeling out on the rainbow crosswalk. And because there's skid marks in the street, it's a hate crime. Maybe it was a political message. Maybe he considers skid marks a political message. But a rainbow is approved by government as a political message. Skid marks can put you in prison for a hate crime. Yeah, we're being told how to think by government now. It's crazy. I refuse to submit. Okay, awesome audio of the entire week coming up next. And it is time when we count down our favorite sound bites of the entire week.
This is Dory Monson's Awesome Audio, Clips of the Week.
Okay, at number three, as the police are being defunded all around the country, including in Seattle, if they get their way, there are cops who are saying, look, you're telling us that we can't do our jobs. There's a cop who's a black guy in New York City, and he had a lot to say about these cautious police tactics that are being imposed.
So I've been studying these tactical videos they got me watching, and I'm Officer Chris O'Hanahy, and I'm here with NYPD, and I would like to go through a consistent tactical video with you guys. When approaching the suspect, make sure a firearm is not facing the subject. You do not want to scare them. And let me begin. Hello, sir. You are under arrest. Maybe we're just detaining you. We're not sure. And yes, we understand that you just shot at those people over there and that you're not holding the firearm, so that's fine. But you did strike two of them. So what we're going to need you to do is lay down on the ground. Me and my counterpart here, who will remain off camera, are going to just approach you, touch your shoulder, and hopefully slide your arm to the back. But it's a little uncomfortable. All right, sorry. We'll use several cuffs just to make sure that your arms stay in whatever position you want them to be. But you need to lay down on the ground. What? Oh, yeah, I need to call for additional. Yes. So let me get another additional unit over here to come to.
It just goes on and on. At number two, the Harvard grad, Clara Janover, who threatened, if you say words she doesn't like, she will stab you and watch you bleed out.
The next person who has the sheer nerve, the sheer entitled caucasity to say all lives matter, I'm going to stab you. I'm going to stab you. And while you're struggling and bleeding out, show you my paper cut and say, my cut matters too.
Well, she has a prestigious accounting firm that offered her an internship upon graduation, but they said, now we have an anti-violence policy.
Trump's orders took my job away from me. I've gotten death threats, rape threats, violent threats. It was okay, but now it's just like my future. My future's entirely compromised because...
She was so tough when she was going to stab somebody to death. Oh, that's our awesome audio. That's it for this week. I hope you have a fantastic weekend. Tom and Curly are coming up next. See you back here Monday, high noon. God bless you. Head up.
You about to break yourself. Believe that. Bye, Felicia.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.